Greetings and salutations from the Agile Revolution. This is Tony.
Tony, you sound a little hoarse there.
I am a little hoarse. I'm an Agile Australian. May have had a touch too many...
Sarsaparillas
later in the night with our guest.
Yeah.
He was responsible for it.
That was good, wasn't
it? So welcome, Martin Kearns.
Hey, finally, you must be running out. What number is this, 140? you're running out, so you got to me, is that it?
He's been ragging on me since day one.
And I'm Craig, just for those who don't know. Well,
I'm sure they know you're Craig. Do you think?
You said who you were going to...
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay, right. Just wow.
Good start.
Okay, we're starting.
277 episodes and you're still ragging on me.
Yeah.
So, Martin, tell us, for those of you who don't know... Who the heck you are?
All right. Yeah. So, been living in Australia, so kind of hidden away from the rest of the world, trying to do Agile since 2005. So I started reading about it in 2004 when I was told not to. I did it anyway. And then I was told not to implement it. I did it anyway. So 2005, I took it seriously. And by 2008, I was one of the first three certified Scrum coaches, which is now the CEC, the Certified Enterprise Coach. And I think when I went on that journey, because it's a really good experience, I think that was a turning point. Like I just said, you know, I reckon this is my career. So I've been doing Agile in all different places since then. I've been working in consultancies for over a decade, different ones. Went to a company called Renewtech, which was a startup, and I said I'm going to start an Agile practice, which no one really knew what that meant. And we sponsored the first Agile Australia conference and grew to a size, bought by SMS. SMS kind of killed Agile, actually killed themselves at the same time. And yeah, now we're in a dev. I've just had a blast of a year. It's been great. So doing a lot more of the strategic consulting. I went and got an MBA, and I'd got an MBA so I could actually hold conversations with people that had MBAs. And at the same time, I actually learned something, which wasn't bad. So yeah, that's trying to bring Agile to that CXO level. That's kind of my mission at the moment, and I've got different ways of doing it.
So, interestingly enough, we go back a long way ourselves.
Yeah, damn right.
And we have a mutual friend, so, you know, there's never a podcast goes by without mentioning Mr. Coburn.
Oh, yeah.
But,
okay.
If you're playing the drinking game.
Just so you know, I brought Coburn to Australia for the first time.
And that was what I was getting to. So you're responsible for it, right?
Yeah, I am. When Renewtech was bought by SMS, with every acquisition, there's this period of honeymoon where we love you and welcome to our world, and in that space there's always a bit of budget for being, you know, let's bring someone or let's make them happy. So I got Alistair over as part of the kind of kickstarting Agile into SMS, and I had great hopes that I'd be able to convert a conservative organization into like an Agilist organization, and brought Alistair over. He was expensive. Managed to get it over the line. I did his Agile Advanced training 3 times in that 3 weeks, and he bet the out of me every single time.
It was a very alchemic thing to watch Martin lose lose his manure.
Yeah.
Whilst trying to do the Carpaccio slice exercise.
Yeah, well, you have to remember he made it even harder for me because he gave me extra constraints.
Correct.
And he made my, like, he was, because I knew, he was, because I got to his, like, advanced agilist, so he's got this accreditation that you have to do his course 3 times, which is a pretty nice way of earning some money, but at the same time, he really beats the crap out of you. And what he was teaching me was the humility to walk in a beginner's mind and allow yourself to still be in the process of learning, even when you have deep experience in something.
And
I think I didn't get that a couple of times because I was just trying to beat the game, but he was a dick from the start with me, because my first statement to him was, when he introduced me to Carpaccio, I said I haven't programmed for a while. He goes, fine, you're going to learn JavaScript at the same time as you're going to do this, and I'm trying to get JavaScript going, because he says you don't need that. And so I'm on a JavaScript learning course at the same time as doing Carpaccio in 8-minute sprints, and him hassling me the whole time. So that was a great start.
Yeah.
And so the second time around, I was like, I'd been programming JavaScript for like 2 weeks. So I went in there and I was ready to go. I had an IDE because I said, I don't have anything on my laptop. And he goes, Notepad, what more do you need? So I went in, I had a JavaScript IDE, had it all set up. I had my forms kind of layouts. I didn't cheat. Like I didn't actually try and do the exercise. I was just getting my IDE set up when I was ready to go. And then he pitched me with two people who just argued against one another the whole time. Like they were just constantly arguing. And I'm trying to like program with these two going at it. And I remember I was quite sexist because I naturally started to align with the bloke because the gear was just so annoying because she was high-pitched kind of growling kind of going on, and she was right and he was wrong, and Alistair just ripped me to shreds for that one too, as well as the stress of trying to be doing JavaScript, and then he just made it worse the third time round. This is like a counselling session, I just started to realise, the third time round he had me do it in Excel, and he basically said, you know, here's your team, and all you can do is ask questions. So I asked questions, and they kind of knew. Anyway, the questions I asked led to, and at the end, you know, you have to introduce what your strategy. So they presented their strategy to him, and he said, "This is the most advanced strategy I have ever had presented in this course." And Martin wasn't able to provide anything but questions. How did that work? And I'm like, well, I don't know. So then the fourth time round, he just said, right, that's it. He said to these two people, this person is not to be spoken to other than to tell him exactly what to do. He is not allowed to touch a keyboard without you saying so. And the only keys he can touch are the ones that you tell him to touch. So I was put into this position of not being able to do absolutely anything, and they were making some bad mistakes, like I couldn't do anything, and I reached this threshold of pain where I kind of opened myself up and said, well, you know, I'm still trying to learn, so what can I learn while I'm being controlled? And for me, that was it was kind of like a breakthrough. And at the end of that session, he says, you've passed, I'll give you your advanced agilis. But I remember that threshold of pain to open you into a different way of looking at things. I think that's what we're trying to do when, as coaches, we have to try and go through that threshold of past knowledge to be able to ask the open questions to help others self-realize. And to do that, sometimes you do have to be subservient to the situation. And that's what I got out of Carpaccio.
Interesting though, from someone who was there.
Yeah, you saw from the outside.
They were 8 second expletives, as far as I could see.
Oh, he swore at me and everything. Yeah, it was quite stressful.
I guess we're a loaded question I want to ask, since you're both here. And I have my own opinions on this, but I guess I'll be the arbiter here, as you know, the Alistair Coburn fan club.
I mean, the hate club.
But,
yeah.
But you love and hate him. Yeah.
But he's one of those people that inspires thinking. I mean, what do you think that? What's that secret sauce?
So I think there's three parts. He's half mad, so we have to just get it
out. Yeah. So let's get that out straight away. Okay. He's got a crazy streak. Yeah.
So the first thing is he's not comfortable with his current knowledge. Like he's always drawing. He's always thinking.
Yeah.
So when you meet him, it's not as if you're having the same conversation. And sometimes in his training course, he's using the same material, but in conversation with Alistair, you go into different worlds. He also, I'd say, is out of all of the original manifesto people I've met, he's the one who I think can read you the best. So he can see your biases. He can see your knowledge, you can see your knowledge gap, and I think he has an arrogance about being able to call it out to your face, whereas some people, I think Matt Fowler probably can do similar things, but I think he keeps it inside himself and probably just calls you a twat and moves on, whereas I think Alistair is able to say, like, this is what I like about you, and this is what I don't like, and this is what I think you need to start doing. And I find those things awesome. And you know, he let me coach him once, and I caught him brilliantly. And the thing about it is that when I caught him having got to a position of getting to the question that he had an emotion to, he realized, okay, that's the question I need to answer. But he was grateful. So I think he also was willing to be coached by like a junior. Mm. So I think that's something that a lot of people say, I am the expert. Alistair said, yeah, coach me. Mm. And he was open to an experience that he wasn't controlling, mm. which is, I think, what he taught me.
Yeah, mm. yeah. I think that, you know, for me, he always made sense. Mm. And the reason he made sense was because he asks those questions. He doesn't tell you. Like, there'll be a very rare that he will give you the answer.
Yeah, I mean, it can be very frustrating for some people. With his heart, like, I'm not necessarily always his biggest fan of the Heart of Agile, because I think sometimes the questions are too simple for people who go to an advanced course thinking they're half advanced, and the way he asks questions, they get frustrated because the gap is too big. Mm. I think he's got this desire to keep going. Mm. He's not sitting on his laurels. He's not saying, well, this is what I did in 2002.
Yeah. He's still gone, right?
Yeah. And but I also think he's one of the few at his level that are, he's open to the experience of being taught by a junior. Hmm. Yeah. I see myself as a junior, and he does it with others, and he'll also ask you a question with a genuine interest in the answer.
Yeah.
Rather than, I'm trying to manipulate what you're going to say next so I seem to look better. Hmm. I think he's an interesting character for sure. And I think why he inspires me is because he's able to kind of call out my weaknesses with evidence, and then we're able to go on from there. I'll give you a good example. When he came over to Australia for the first time, I organised a day with two people who had been working really hard in SMS. When the three of us sat down, we just basically brainstormed with them to come up with the Agile dev track for IC Agile. But there was more, we were just wanting to brainstorm with Alistair. It didn't really matter what it was. Mm. Alistair just turned paid engagement into something that benefited his IC Agile goals at the time.
He's good at that.
Genius, right? In that, we were having an argument. It was pretty heated. And I called and I said, hey, look, I love that you have an opinion, but since I'm paying for it, we're going to do this. And he said, right, fine. And we walked away, and then we stopped like at 11:30. I said, do you want to go and get a coffee? I said, yeah, I'd love a coffee. And the two other guys were looking and going, you guys are going to go have a coffee after that? And they were going, like, after what? And he goes, you've been arguing, and, you know, we're fighting. He goes, no, we're not. And Alistair said, we're being creative. Mm. Now, that's the reason why I'm going to go and have a coffee, because if I didn't like him, I'd go and have the coffee on my own. But I think some people don't sometimes figure out when creativity leads to robust conversation, but that doesn't actually have to get in the way of friendship. Mm. I think some people miss that in day-to-day business, right? I think it happens all the bloody time. You know, it pisses me off. So I think Alistair's got the magic sauce being able to do that. But I'm sure he's annoyed people over his time, but I think he's willing to say to himself, well, I'll cut my losses, but I'm not going to change who I am.
Mm. Well, we'll find out when he listens to the podcast.
Yeah.
So what for you?
Pay him to listen to the podcast.
You probably would have to pay him. Yeah. He'll like that.
Yeah. Yeah. He sent a check every month.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. So what's next for Mr. Kearns?
I'm definitely going to do it. The CAL. I'm going to get a CAL.
So,
which is Certified Agile Leadership.
Thank you.
And the reason why is because I think what I've been doing with my MBA, doing group exercises in assignments with MBA students was, it was an experience. And it was really, it's a good one because it was so hard. And I feel that what I've been doing at the strategy level and bringing agility into strategy, I think I'm ready to go and turn that into a syllabus. And I'm passionate for it, and I've been working pretty hard to be in the headspace to do it. Like it's you know, when you're always selling or you're always trying to solve problems, it's sometimes hard to be creative. And what I loved about just working with InnoDev is that, you know, space to be creative is maintained, whereas in when I worked in SMS, you got space when clients gave you space. And like January was always a time to be creative, whereas in InnoDev it can continue. So I want to put together a leadership course that gets people to, I suppose, see what my journey over how many years we're gone, 14 years in this space. And so when I was in athletics, we used to do national squad course sessions, and we once had the sports psychologist help me. I was a middle distance runner, and the thing about middle distance running, you're always going to feel pain, right? It's just a guarantee. And one thing we were trying to learn was how to be comfortable in pain, because that's what endurance running is about, right? That's how you get faster. It's not your body goes faster. You learn to cope with lactic acid more. You learn to relax your muscles under duress. And I think that's what I'm trying to do with Agile. I'm not going to ever say Agile is going to be easy. Actually, it's the opposite. It's always going to hurt. And I just want to help people to be able to understand, to prepare for pain, and to see it as part of the outcome. And in the end, when you break a personal best, you celebrate the PB, but you also know how hard it was, and you actually kind of love it because it was so hard. And I think when we want to bring Agile into organizations, I think we need to, you know, enjoy the pain by being prepared for it. And that's what I think what I want to do going forward. That sounds a bit aspirational, but that's kind of my spot.
Excellent.
You alluded to sort of as your stepping stone there, that you've been doing a lot of work of Agile and strategy. And I think that's something that a lot of organizations, I'm sure we know, really kind of miss the mark, because they still do the 5-year plan or the year budgeting cycle or that kind of thing. What does, for those listening, what does Agile and strategy look like?
So I think the most important part is to get an appreciation on the environmental factors that are forcing agility into organizations. So in Australia, we're really lucky that there was an amazing paper written on Australia 2030, and in that I talked about macro trends. And I spoke about these trends that we have no control over that are going to change everything that we do. And those that won't change will die. And they talked about, you know, X number of Australian organisations will die in by 2030. I think it was like 70% of the top 200. SMS was in that. So there's one. Straight away I was in one. So I'll give you an example. In the macro trends, one of them that they talk about is that the knowledge of customers is superior than ever before, and you know and that's based on customers being smarter because the education standards have increased, literacy has increased, but then it's also the intelligence of the crowd, social intelligence of Facebook, you know, pulling, it was made Target take stock off the shelves, so because a woman said, I don't want to dress my daughter as a prostitute. So that one, so they call it greater customer expectations, is something that no longer organizations control. Before, the organizations felt that we just had to put the right marketing message out and say, you need this, and they'll buy it. And we're like, stuff that. I'm going to be expecting a bit more than that. I'm not going to just buy Coke because there's a hot chick drinking Coke with some water going down her forehead. And we're a bit smarter than that. And like Coke and sugar and the health element has meant that they're having to shift their sales. They've got like Diet Coke is now called No Sugar. There's a good reason for that, because of the push for greater choice of health. That's one. So the whole idea is to get people to understand that the macro factors are so now out of control that you actually have to accept that VUCA is here to stay. And rather than seeing I am the smartest in the organization because I'm at the top, realizing how consciously incompetent you are, that you actually now have to have capabilities that are smarter than you because you can no longer dictate. So sitting down and writing something to say I know everything that's going to happen is a false sense of arrogance, and it's a false sense of direction. So how do we listen more effectively? Well, you only listen more effectively when you've already accepted that you need to listen, and the need is all based on these factors that are beyond their control. So that 2030 paper is a great start. It was written by CSIRO, and it's on our disruptive economy. And what's sad about Australia is that our index rate and innovation is going down. And they attributed to three things, and all of them is when Australia has been successful. So during GFC, Australia did really well. And that's now an arrogance that has been brought into our attitude to strategy. So it's, when you look at the likes of what America doing from a startup perspective, we're jealous, but we're jealous and fat and lazy. So it's eventually we need to get going, and I think it's time. So that's what I'm working on.
The question I always get asked, and since your opinion is, in your 14 years of doing this, you've seen a lot of organisations. Would you consider anyone in this country, or even worldwide, in your journey, that are doing this really well? Because I find it sometimes hard to answer that question. There's lots of pockets and things, but any sort of standout organisations?
Yeah. So I'm going to say this one. I think we have to understand that no one's ever going to be perfect. And when we talk about good, there's always better. So when you have no end state to agile, you have to accept there's no end state. So you can't look at. You don't look for best of breed. You look for someone who's actually done something that made a difference. So my favourite organisation for that is Australia Post. Mm-hmm. Basically, the organisation was going to die. Mm. And one of the reasons why they wished to continue was because of their responsibility to rural backgrounds. Because in a lot of places, the post office in an emergency is the crisis centre. And they said, if post offices go, where's their crisis centre? So, They broke into identity services, so you can get a passport from a post office in the height of terrorism, with your child protection card. That one, think about it, from all the social media around the evilness of this world when it comes to child harm, we're able to do that in a post office. So. That was a huge breakthrough. They've broken ground into travel insurance. So yes, there's still a lot of conservatism and legacy, and they haven't totally radicalised. But when you go into Australia Post, it's a different place than it was 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
I did an EPMO. We called it a lens, where basically it's visualising strategy, the operationalising of strategy. How can you visualize it and create an immersive space that gets you to see strategy in reality? So that's where I was working, and I mean, they had a $2 billion program going at the time, and just to see how people were responding to that space was just amazing. And when I was a coach in the identity services space, we were having conversations around how do we make this process of being able to purchase a passport seamless, and the experience being great with all of these conditions around safety and security that we had to pass. And that wouldn't have happened if we were trying to write it all down into a business spec. They actually broke Word because they were trying to do track changes and I think it broke after 232 or something. So then they just said, look, and it was just to see them crack break Word and then react to that. Mm. I mean, that was massive. So I really like the attitude that Australia Post have had over the last 8 years. That one for me is a leader. And I'm also noticing pockets of agile in government. So I'm finding in Australia, government has got greater openness to agility than private industry. And I've seen some amazing stuff in government, where like Energy Safe Victoria, probably I really like what they've been doing. Like their whole IT department now is fully agile. They had Lean Startup, Kanban, and Scrum all coexisting, working to different projects. So they've understood purposefulness, and they are now selective of the right agile tool to suit the problem. And when they're starting something, they start with, okay, so what level of complexity and how do we wish to manage this? I mean, the maturity of those conversations. I mean, they have a they have a half-day training course for a steering committee to go in to basically learn about how to steer an agile project, and you know the levers that they have to look for, the data that's different, and the reports that they will see, and the responsibility of a steering member is now and they go on it once a year, just even to remember. So I mean, stuff like that I think is amazing. I think anyone who's doing agile at a proper level, I think steering is still required, but steering is different, and the knowledge to steer has to be learned. I think it's half the problems are when the steering is still traditional. They're interpreting data to traditional mindset rather than actually learning that the steering of agility is different. Mm. So I like those two myself. I see a lot of organizations who've said we're kind of really great agile, and I've hired a couple and they come in and I assume, and I've had some shockers. Mm. So I stopped. Just the bandwagon of I'm great is usually a good leading indicator that you're not. I think the ones who think, oh, we're not as good and we're a bit embarrassed, I'm finding greater levels in there. So I think...
Bit of a fail agility, isn't it?
Yeah. It is a bit of fail agility, right? Yeah.
Aim bomb. I think there's... Yeah. I think we all have to remember that what we are doing, we can never achieve.
Yeah.
We can only be better than the past. And I think anyone who thinks they're great and they've already done it, well, they're already lost. Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, I guess based on that, Mr. Kurtz, got you on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can stop ragging on me about
it. Yeah.
You're gonna have to find something else.
But
anything
you like, but when's my invite back?
Yeah. Ah, there we go.
There you go.
Yeah, and you know, we'll actually publish it maybe next year.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, Martin, if people want to know more about you and get in contact with me.
So LinkedIn and would be the best place to go. And you can, like, I try to put stuff up there and have a look at it. So I go to LinkedIn. That's my starting point. Eventually, I will start writing blogs again, but I'll post them via the InnoDev website. I'll always publish them in LinkedIn first. So.
Mm. And there's lots of good stuff, I guess. There's so many topics we can go into, but you know, one of the things that you've given to the Australian community, I think, sometimes is a difference in thought. Not just stock standard type of thing. So if people are looking for those different topics, we talk about strategy and a few things here, but it's that kind of stuff. Your talk you gave on contracts a few years ago people will ask me that, and straight to that blog is where I send them.
It's
good stuff. So I tell listeners to go on kind of the back catalogue.
Cool.
Lots of good stuff there.
I've always been trying to stretch the mindset into the areas that are awkward. So the agile contracts, the reason why I did it was because nobody else was. It was awkward, and it's weird that agile contracts have been accepted greater in government than in private industry. What's that all about?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Tony, we like to finish the podcast on a little note. So
what we usually do here is we finish it with Viva la Revolution. So, will you join me?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
One, two, three.
Viva la Revolution!
Thanks, Lan.
Yeah. You've been waiting forever to do that, haven't you?
Lan. That's just goodbye in Irish.